Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
That presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
Unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com. Designed for work.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Amazing Amazon shares higher after a big earnings beat and solid growth in its key cloud business. And it's not the only earnings story tonight. Pinterest, AMD, Starbucks, all with big moves. We'll go inside the numbers straight ahead. Plus, rate cuts on the horizon. Chances of the Fed making a move lower this year have been coming down. One top strategist says the central bank may need to act as soon as July. He'll lay out his case minutes from now. And later, lighting up, the DEA making a big move to reclassify marijuana, and that is sending pot stocks well into the green today. What the move means for the road to legalization and for trading in these names. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq on the desk tonight. Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, and Steve Grasso. Stocks closing out a rough April on a down note, with the Nasdaq sinking more than 2% and the Dow shedding 570 points, accelerating the last 10 minutes of trading. All three major indices closing near their lows of the session and well in the red for the month, each ending five-month winning streaks. The Dow posting its biggest monthly loss since September of 2022. We'll dive more into what is behind these moves later this hour, but we got to start off with Amazon. Shares are higher, though off their best after-hours highs. The company reporting a beat on the top and the bottom lines and higher ad revenues and sales at AWS. Guidance for Q2, though, came in below expectations. Kate Rooney joins us now with all the details from the quarter. Kate.
Hey, Melissa. So cloud growth was the key story here. AWS sales, that's what folks were watching. 17% growth, that was better than the 14.7% Wall Street was expecting. AI appears to be driving a little bit of that. The company says AI and Gen AI is now a multi-billion dollar revenue run rate business. Overall, AWS revenue is now at $100 billion in ARR. CFO Brian Olsavsky just on a call with media talking about what he called the cost optimizations diminishing. He said here there's going to be a level of ongoing cost optimization. He says they think the majority of the recent cycle is behind them and they are likely closer to a steady state of optimization efforts. You remember they were talking for a while about attenuating. They now say that's diminishing. So it looks like cloud demand picture looking a little bit better. Quickly on CapEx as well, he said they do anticipate overall capital investments to meaningfully increase year over year, primarily driven by higher infrastructure CapEx to support growth in AWS, including Gen AI. Really lines up with what we heard from the rest of big tech. Total revenue for Amazon, that hit an all-time high, $143 billion for Amazon, up 13%. The North American business, when it comes to revenue, that was $83 billion, up 12%. Advertising revenue, another high-margin part of this business, that was stronger than expected, grew 24%. That was double overall sales growth. Advertising came in at $11.8 billion. And then keeping a bit of a lid on some of the excitement was a miss on guidance. For the current quarter, guidance was a bit light. Sales are look to be coming in between $144 billion and $149 billion. Analysts were looking for $150 billion. Profitability also looking better. Free cash flow improved to an inflow of $50 billion, $50.1 billion. For the trailing 12 months, that compared to an outflow of $3 billion a year ago. Operating cash flow also jumped by about 82%. So the profitability picture looking better as well, guys. Back over to you.
And Kate, when we hear cost optimization, that really means from their customers, correct?
That's right. Yeah.
Ways
so that
to
would
save
be
from their customers.
Exactly. From their cloud customers, from enterprises out there. So there is a little bit of a read through to the rest of the software space. If you're hearing that from the biggest player out there that, you know, guys, it's looking better than it was a year ago, it could be good news, you know, for the rest of the software players out there.
All right. Kate, thanks. Kate Rooney, keep us posted on the conference call details here. But so far, it's, as she mentioned, a mixed bag here. What do you make of this quarter?
It's a mixed bag, but it's amazing how we can applaud the expenditure and the investment in CapEx as it relates to AI and everything else. And yet, you know, Meta was not. But yet it's so consistent with what we heard from Microsoft and from Google in terms of their cloud business and what this means. And it just, it always, you know, I feel like this earnings season, especially, I go back to that time when NVIDIA NVIDIA had that first blowout number and they guided to where demand was and they had chips and the world woke up. But really, the analyst community and the street woke up and we woke up and said there's going to be a CapEx cycle like you haven't seen before. And this was at a time we were worried about growth. This is, you know, this is back when I think people were very concerned about where there really was growth overall in the economy, but even within the tech sector. So I love the fact that Andy Jassy really has been focused also on making this company more profitable. So that operating profit, which was, you know, expected to be 11.4, comes in at 15 billion. The dynamic, I think, around the core business and the levers that Amazon at some point really can pull in terms of profitability, that's also been something. I think it's also just interesting to note that after the stock, you know, going up 130%, it's at the same multiple it was at the low before it made that move. In other words, it's growing into a bigger multiple, and yet it's not a bigger multiple.
Yeah, I mean, the bar was high. We had already a Microsoft beat, a Google beat when it came to the cloud revenue, and here we are with an Amazon beat on AWS beat on cloud. So at least that was a big sigh of relief. But what do you make of the move here? Do you think it's a confirmation of that big stock move that we've seen over the past year? I mean, what is it in your view?
Yeah, I think, well, it's bad tape, right? Mm-hmm. So nice to hear that pop of good news. There was AWS was certainly good news, but it's already, I think, been up on the same news of everyone else doing well, and it would make sense that everyone else's cloud business is really strong, as is theirs. So that's good. I don't make too much out of the guidance being a little bit light. I feel like I don't know where in the guidance that is, whether that's on the retail side or on the cloud side. It makes a big difference. But I to the extent that's weighing on the stock, I sort of think that it shouldn't. I feel like it's just sort of happening under the weight of being last in what has been a positive tape for cloud growth and this market today.
You know, AWS, that was fine. They're the largest player there. So for that, it just had to keep growing at a certain point, because then you get to that. I hate calling it a law of large numbers, but they're so much bigger than everybody else. They really need to leave a mark there. And then how about ads for Prime Video? They started that in January. I just noticed it, by the way. That's going to be another revenue generator for them. And they could turn that toggle switch on and off. And then Prime membership is up to $140. Another thing that I just recently noticed.
When you open up your credit card bill?
When you open up your credit card bill. I thought it was still $100 or thereabouts.
Really? It was so long ago, $100.
I know. I haven't looked in a while. So there was a couple of things they had to hit. Plus the efficiencies and fulfillment. Right before the pandemic or during the pandemic, they really overloaded in fulfillment centers. They have 750,000 robots in their fulfillment centers. So their fulfillment costs aren't keeping up with their revenue. That's increasing their marginability. So everything looks good, but if you look at the stock price, it's fading. 5% or 6% once they print, and then it comes back. So as Karen said, bad tape. But if you look at Microsoft and you look at Google, they reported, they skyrocketed. And then if you look at the chart, they both came in. So maybe people are saying, hey, good print. Let me let it breathe a little bit. Maybe I'll be able to pick it up on a discount if the overall market sells off.
Now that we have the luxury of having seen all three of the quarters from Microsoft, Alphabet, as well as Amazon, which do you think was the best?
Oh, boy.
Regardless of stock reaction, which quarter was the best?
Well, I think it was Google, because I think relative to expectations about their core business, I mean, they was an emphatic yes, we are kicking it. So, but it's fair. I mean, we're a week into digesting this group of the largest companies in the world, who we all know are giving us 80% of the earnings growth for the S&P. We expected a lot here. I get back to a company like AWS like Amazon, but with AWS, with the retail business in North America, that operating margin up almost 6%, well above expectation. I mean, I love the fact that Amazon can give you the profitability at a time when they're investing in their business. And I think, again, they have been investing. They haven't fallen asleep at the switch.
I think Google also. I mean, maybe the expectations were lowest for them because they have stumbled a little bit. And to just have positive momentum in all of parts of their business. And then also to say, you know what, we hear you, Street. We're not doing as much with our balance sheet as we could. We're going to address that. And I hope there's a year of efficiency in there somewhere.
For more on Amazon, let's bring in Brent Thill, Managing Director and Tech Sector Leader at Jefferies. Brent, great to see you. What's your take? What do you make of this light guide for Q2?
Hi, Melissa. The guide doesn't really matter. They always guide conservatively, so I kind of wash that out of the mix. I think the most important thing was AWS, which is 50% of their market cap, had 17% growth, well ahead. Their backlog growth last quarter foreshadowed that AWS was going to be good, booking over 40% growth. In backlog, you're going to have revenue growth reacceleration. So we're seeing AWS inflect. We're seeing the international business become profitable, which we were expecting a loss. And then the third is the ad business. Advertising was ahead by a bit. So I think you have effectively a game of inches on the beat. You don't have a blowout here, but you have consistent, steady recovery. And all eyes were on AWS. So that's been phenomenal to see. Now it's going to shift to AI. You know, where are they at? They're behind Microsoft. How are they playing catch up? Jassy said last quarter, this is going to drive billions of dollars. Trying to get more color on that. So everyone's going to go direct to AI and what's the next leg for this. But overall, a really solid print. I don't pay too close attention to the guide. They've been blowing out the guide every single quarter, and they've had a really disciplined focus on the bottom line. So we're encouraged by what we're seeing. We're not encouraged by the stock reaction. And welcome to be a software internet analyst right now. No one wants to talk to us because everyone wants to be a semiconductor analyst. So that's the only downside right now.
Your day will come, Brett. I'm sure it will. In 20 minutes time or so, what do you want to hear Amazon talk about in terms of the next leg for AI instead of just providing the cloud services that are needed to support AI? What do you want to hear from the company?
Number one is time to revenue. So we are in this biggest hype cycle ever for AI. When's this actually going to result in revenue? Number one. Number two, what is the differentiation against the rest of the competitors? Third, Microsoft is going up and down the stack, security to applications to productivity tools. They have an advantage in the world of AI because they can go up and down. AWS doesn't play in the apps game. So how can they enable broader adoption by these enterprises? Because right now, Microsoft's running away with the show. And so how do they come up with something that's unique, exciting, interesting, that's going to catch people? And right now, I don't think we've necessarily maybe heard that. They probably have that behind the scenes. We haven't heard it from them. So we'd love to see that. But I think it really goes down to the reason why tech investors are so involved with or excited about what's happening in internet and software right now is that hardware, all of AI is in the infrastructure category. It's at Dell, it's at AMD, it's at NVIDIA. And right now, it's really hard to get the interest of tech investors because that's where they want to be, because it hasn't come to the software layer yet. It will. And so that's kind of the big question is, when does this actually have a bigger impact on revenue?
Brent, it's Karen. Thanks for being on today. How do you think about valuing AWS aside from the rest of the business? What are the right metrics to, what are the right multiples?
So we do, Amazon's valued by us by some of the parts. We break all the businesses apart and apply different multiples. Retail business trades at a lower multiple, AWS trades at a higher multiple. AWS today, in our view, it's about 50% of the market cap of the company. It's the most important business. If you spawn off AWS into its own side business, you effectively, again, at $100 billion run rate, investors, you know, in software are paying anywhere between, I name it 7-Eleven, my favorite convenience store, anywhere between 7 and 11 times forward revenue. And you could argue, again, maybe it's a little lower, maybe it's higher. We can now look at margins. I mean, the margin was one of the highest margins we've seen at AWS at 38% for the quarter. So I think you can look at it from an EBITDA basis. You can look at it on a multiple of revenue. As I said, 7 to 11 is kind of the range. And again, you can start to really look and understand why this business is so important to their overall market cap if it was a standalone business. We put a premium on the business because of they are the number one vendor. They are the furthest ahead in revenue. If you combine Microsoft and Google together, they still don't even equal Amazon's revenue. So again, big premium in our playbook. Again, some of the parts.
All right, Brent, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your take on earnings. Brent Thill of Jefferies. Conference call is just about 14 minutes away. We've got the stock up by about 3% right now. But let's get to another earnings alert now on Starbucks. Coffee chain reporting a miss on the top and the bottom line. The stock touching levels not seen since July of 2022. Let's get to Steve Kovac with all the details. Steve.
Hey, Melissa. Yeah, shares are down about 10% on this. And Starbucks missed those expectations on the top and bottom lines following weak demand in the United States and China. Overall, same-store sales were down 4% year-on-year with a 6% drop in transactions, though the company says average ticket price is up 2%. For the U.S. specifically, same-store sales were down 3% with a 7% decline in transactions, but it's even worse over in China with same-store sales down 11%. Now, no guidance here in the release. That's going to come on the conference call, which kicked off at the top of this hour, Mel. We see shares down 9.8%.
All right, Steve, thank you. Steve Kovac. Wow, that's quite a slide in the after hours. I will go to you, Tim, who you've been lamenting for some time about the price, and apparently a lot of others are with you.
And the price of the stock and the company is also coming to a place where it's going to start to get interesting. We can talk about the charts in a second. It's a case where I do think there's a competitive landscape. There's a consumer that ultimately is trading down. And even that $4 luxury that was a Starbucks, cup of coffee that people were willing to spend for, I just think that there's a place where you're seeing them run out of gas. They were raising prices for 3 years. They have higher costs across their business, certainly in terms of labor and wage and some of the dynamics, even on some of the cost inputs. So I think you're going to own this company cheaper. I think you're going to own it lower. I still think it's world class. China's an issue. It's not growing where it was. They're not getting the growth. The fact that you saw that kind of a contraction in U.S. same store sales is almost shocking. And again, we haven't seen this in 3 years for Starbucks. So you're going to get this company lower. I'm looking to get it lower, and I'll wait.
The CEO is saying it's a highly challenged environment. Inflation remains high. Consumers are still getting used to higher prices. So even now, they're still getting used to those higher price mm-hmm. points.
But some of the Chipotle also. Higher, but doesn't seem to affect their business the same way. I know it's not the biggest part of their business, but this China miss is so big. I mean, I think the analysts, the high and the low was up 2, down 5. This came in down 11. What's happening there? And what's the read through to other things? I don't know. But this is definitely a 3-day rule kind of thing. If you have any hope or any thought of, I'm waiting to buy it now.
I mean, maybe longer.
But you're not going to miss it. You're not going to miss it in six days.
Yes.
So there's nothing here that's going to change quickly.
I mean, right. I don't know what they'll say in the call, but the analysts will not be happy with this. So we're going to see that downgrade.
I mean, there's only so much you can do at this point when it comes to higher costs of doing business. They can try and be more efficient, et cetera, but there's only so much.
They're still going to have that. So Tim started off saying you have wage, you have unionized workforce that they're battling. Wages are going to be an important topic, per hour workers. You could make the case that this stock is in a downward trend for over a year now with some blips here and there, but you don't really find any real support, and it's just a dagger support, meaning there's no base of it. It's just a low until you get to low 70s. So you have a little bit more support there, but I think it's a wait and see, and there's a lot of headwinds, so you can take your time and wait.
What is the read-through to the consumer? I mean, Karen brings up a good point in terms of Chipotle versus Starbucks. Is it that, you can either buy a latte or you're halfway to a dinner with Chipotle? I mean, I would do that calculus, right?
I would rather buy
dinner.
There are many with the liquid diet. Again, I think you've gotten to a place where that's right. I mean, a coffee and a donut's not supposed to cost $10, and yet it does. And this is a story where I just think the competitive landscape in the coffee shop world, because the margins are so good, have gotten very, very intense. But international growth has been a big part of this story and the slowdown. And they're citing this. They're talking about headwinds. They're talking about the Middle East. They're talking about different parts, not just of China, but other parts of Asia. So you're going to buy this company cheaper.
Meantime, a pair of semi-stocks, both lower after the results. The conference calls for AMD and Supermicro, both underway. Christina Partsenevelis is on the phone. That's very confusing here. Two calls at once. She joins us with the latest. Christina.
I do have my headphones, and I'm listening. And the call is underway for AMD. The major focus is on their AI chip, the MI300 series. And AMD is right now saying is the fastest product to break $1 billion in cumulative sales. Again, this is on the call. Previously, the company estimated that there would be about $3.5 billion in 2024 revenues. Well, right now, the CEO, Lisa Su, bumping that number to $4 billion. Which I have to say was largely expected by the street, but nonetheless, that was the number that a lot of people were looking for, possibly adding to maybe some of the reversal in the stock. What really drove the quarter was not only the new chip and server sales, but also an improvement in their client business, which encompasses PC sales. That was up 80% year over year. Management saying, much like Intel, that the second half of this year will be stronger, driven by that PC refresh cycle and possibly the AI PC, but I'm a little skeptical because we haven't seen that gain traction just yet. Expectations, though, were high for this one, as well as Super Micro earnings. So I'm going to pivot right now because the stock's down about 7%. This is an AI darling. The stock's been run up for quite a while. It's a server assembler. It beat on earnings, but revenue fell short of expectations. There's stiff competition coming from HPE as well as Dell. The strong Q4 and full year revenue guidance that they provided, they increased it, was still not enough to impress investors, and that's why shares are down 7% in after hours. But big picture, still up. What, 700% in the last 12 months? We got to zoom out. There you go, 656, 57. So it was off a little bit.
Yeah, down seven's nothing. Christina, thanks. Christina Partsnevelis. Steve?
Yeah, that's exactly where I would have went. It's up over 700% on a year basis. And when you look at this group, you heard Brent say it, right? This is the most attractive, sexiest spot in that universe of coverage. But what's funny to me is AMD is the second fiddle to NVIDIA. NVIDIA was down today as well as AMD, but NVIDIA after hours is down less than AMD is after hours. So I think people are still playing this as NVIDIA has 80-85% of the market share. It's theirs to lose. Everyone else is a distant second.
All right, coming up, more after hours action. Shares of Pinterest surging after earnings. We'll dig into that seemingly picture-perfect report next. Investors loving on Lilly. Shares are soaring after earnings as the drug maker's weight loss drugs continue to drive results. How they are packing on the pounds where it counts. That's next. Plus, what's next for the Fed? The central bank may not make any moves tomorrow, but our next guest says they should start cutting rates soon. Just how many cuts he is predicting this year, and what happens if we don't get them all that when Fast Money returns. Stay tuned.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until
that presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case
unexplainable?
It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com, designed for work.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Welcome back to Fast Money. An earnings alert on Pinterest. Shares soaring after a beat on the top and the bottom lines. Julia Boorstin just spoke with the CEO. Julia, what's the latest?
Well, Pinterest shares are now up about 18% after beating across the board, including adding 13 million more monthly active users than anticipated, now topping a half a billion monthly active users. CEO Bill Ready's focus on making Pinterest shoppable is paying off. It's engaging users and advertisers. Ready telling me that AI has been a huge tailwind for improving ad results and content recommendations. He also talked about the company's investment in new generative AI ad creation capabilities, as well as tools to optimize and measure ad campaigns. When I asked Reddy if Pinterest is benefiting from the broader digital ad comeback that has bolstered some of its rivals, he said that the macro ad environment is more constructive now. And then in response to a question about the impact of uncertainty around TikTok, Reddy said that Pinterest is thriving when it comes to Gen Z. It's its fastest growing and now largest demographic, saying that Gen Z appreciates Pinterest as an oasis away from what he called toxicity elsewhere on social media. Melissa?
All right, Julia, thank you. Julia Boorstin, that does sound rather pleasant. An oasis from the toxicity. Yeah. You're looking at this quarter.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot to like here. Yeah. Just that revenue beat was huge. Mm-hmm. That's great. Monthly active users was up. ARPU in the U.S., which is their most profitable, which is Tim's favorite.
Average revenue per user. Sorry.
Exactly. That's really impressive. I mean, they had some growth overseas. Those are much less valuable customers, but this was really an impressive beat. I had looked. I thought maybe there was more short interest. There's not.
There shouldn't be.
This was really impressive.
The valuation's hardly demanding. 518 million MAUs and growing 23% on that base. So impressive. Very impressive.
It's been a forgotten about stock. And that's when you look for two things. You look for short interest and you look for interest just around the marketplace. And obviously, when you see a price action like this, the market forgot about this as a stock. Karen and I were talking pre-show. They have an agreement with Google where Google is sending them ads on their platform. That's probably helping as well drive traffic, drive revenues. So let's see where the stock settles in, because a move like this, I don't want to be a buyer or a seller of it.
All right. Meantime, Eli Lilly topping the tape, soaring nearly 6% on earnings beat and full-year guidance that came in well above street estimates, even with a revenue miss in the quarter. Lilly seeing strong demand and increasing supply for its blockbuster weight loss drugs, Mounjaro and Zepbound. The stock is now less than $20 away from the all-time high it made in March. So second half, there will be better production to meet this staggering demand.
I want to go to you first on this one. I mean, so the Mounjaro miss was, that was the only thing to point to, right? And I don't think...
It's not because of demand.
It's right. So
it's wholesaler destocking.
Yeah. We get to this, is it denied, a sale denied or delayed? And it's delayed. So, I mean, this was really impressive. I don't know what inning we're in. It is NVIDIA in just a totally different market. I don't know what inning we're in, but it's still very early. There's a lot of questions that come up, though. Who's going to pay for this, right? How are people going to afford it? Is it going to get cheaper? Are we going to see a oral drug? That seems a little bit of a ways off, but that will also be another leg up, particularly if it comes from one of
But that was at least the pricing side. It was another part of why today was so extraordinary. I mean, the pricing trends for them, I think, against relatively conservative backdrop that the street has to have, was part of this driving performance and on the guide and what you can now begin to at least price in for the next year and a half. You know, however, the timeline is that the analyst community goes after. The incretin production manufacturing ramp is part of this. So an extra $2 billion in capacity is you know, goes straight to the, you know, again, you can put it straight in your model and it changes everything. So it's hard to believe that this is going to be the kind of a two horse race it appears to be right now, with really one horse leading in the case of Lilly. But that is the real question. How long does the competitive landscape hold up? Otherwise, you know, you can price these numbers out for a while. Sounds like NVIDIA with AMD a little behind and nobody else.
I mean, think about this. This is a drug that you have to inject. This is a drug that's expensive. This is a drug where only, I think, 60% of commercial insurers actually cover it. Imagine if any of those things improve. Right. Oral formulation, increase insurance coverage, how much more the demand is. And I'm not even including other uses aside from weight loss.
Those are approved by the
FDA. Exactly.
Yes. And it's about supply. So everyone's saying the same thing. But if you look at the data points, so Lilly is acquiring manufacturing sites. They're putting money into a Germany site. They're putting money into a North Carolina site. So there's a bunch of different things where they're trying to get as much production of it as possible. That's who's going to win this race. So we know that there's a want for it. Everyone said on the desk, what does Bono say it? As my other panelists say, you know, there's a want. It's whoever gets to that spigot first, and it looks like Lily's doing it.
All right. There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
The Fed on the clock. Why our next guest says two cuts this year might not be enough, and what it could all mean for the market. Plus, tipping off for media rights, the major names vying for an NBA deal, and the big offer being prepared. Who's on the sidelines and who's in the game? You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click.
Click, 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 click.
Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks dropping ahead of tomorrow's big Fed decision. The Dow falling nearly 600 points. The S&P down 1.5%, and the Nasdaq leading the losses, sinking more than 2%. All three indices breaking five-month winning streaks. And shares of MicroStrategy down more than 17% after its earnings report last night. The company posting a surprise loss due to accounting of its Bitcoin assets. It added 25,000 of the crypto in the first quarter. Bitcoin, meantime, continuing its April pullback today, dropping nearly 6%, closing out its first down month since last August. And some more after hours action to bring you. Caesars lower after missing the top and the bottom line, and Skyworks dropping on light Q3 guidance. Well, stocks dropped today, comes ahead of tomorrow's big Fed decision. The central bank not expected to make any move on Wednesday, but our next guest does think there may still be at least three cuts on the table this year. Let's welcome Wells Fargo's Mike Schumacher. He's head of macro strategy. Michael, great to have you with us. You say two is in your forecast?
I think that's right, Melissa, but it's interesting at this point, the inflation data simply have to turn. If they don't, zero is the number. If they do, could be three, could be more. But it's almost a bimodal type of thing right now. There's not a happy middle ground for the Fed.
Is hike going to be anywhere on the table, do you think?
Ooh, that's a pretty high bar for a hike. Mm-hmm. Talked to a lot of clients over the last few weeks, and a lot of people are saying, you know what, maybe a hard landing's a lot more likely than we thought a month ago. But a hike, that seems like a real stretch. So I suspect that'll be put off quite a bit.
At what point, I mean, how many sets of data, how many months of data do we need to see where an inflationary trend is established, as opposed to the inflation coming down as we've seen? I mean, it was how many months to establish that trend? Is it going to be?
Well, it's three bad CPIs in a row.
Right, exactly.
Right?
So is that a trend or no?
It's hard to say it isn't. And you can at least make the case inflation's become essentially stuck. So you're not getting a lot of progress at this point for the Fed. That's a tough thing. Does the Fed need to see a couple more bad prints and say we just got this one wrong again? Maybe, but I suspect it's going to hold out and just hope things get a little bit better and not jump the gun quite yet.
So, Michael, let's play this then into just interest rates overall, because there's a difference between inflation and rising rates, right? And this gets into some of the quarterly refunding dynamics. This gets into technical aspects of the market. This gets into foreign central banks maybe not being as active as they might. And ultimately, this makes, you know, it's a financial conditions dynamic that the Fed also wants to think about. Maybe they actually want things a little tighter anyway. But let's talk about rising rates, because rates are moving higher and it's not necessarily inflation to me. I mean, maybe Fed expectations, I mean, seemingly should be at the short end of the curve. Let's stay to the long end of the curve where rates seem to be wanting to go higher. Talk about that. Talk about quarterly refunding. Talk about your view there, because the trend isn't good either.
Yeah, a lot of good points there, Tim. When you think about nominal rates, you want to break them down into two pieces, the inflation component and the real yield. Real yields have gone up a lot this year. Inflation expectations have only started to pick up steam in the last month and a half. So I think you're right. The inflation side has been lagging a bit. People in the market have said, you know, inflation didn't really move much for a while with respect to expectations. Why should we de-anchor now? But when you see two, three bad CPIs and a bad ECI, eventually people in the market say, can't really go against that. So we will price up inflation. But we do think that the big move, if there is another leg up in rates, it's probably in reals, not so much in inflation expectations.
So, sorry, lost my train of thought there for a second. If it's not about real interest rates, then what do you think about this dynamic you touched on a little bit of the quarterly funding and what's coming up and how that's going to be received, and what will that make a difference to the market?
This one should be fairly tame, Karen. The last few have been market movers, to be sure. But the thing is, Treasury's indicated pretty clearly it's about done with increases for now on supply. So you have to wait until next year, probably after the elections, after we get a new Congress, in particular if there's a sweep. It almost doesn't matter if it's Republicans or Democrats sweeping. The way we look at it at Wells Fargo, either way, they'll spend more money. They might spend it differently, but more spending, bigger deficits, more supply, bad for bonds. So that's the thing to watch. But tomorrow should be fairly calm, we think, at least as far as refunding goes.
Last quick question, more likely to have a soft landing or a hard landing at this point?
Soft landing, but just by a little bit. Hard landing is creeping up in terms of probability.
All right, Michael, great to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael Schumacher of Wells Fargo. What do you think to that question?
So I think that the Fed is going to push this into a hard landing. And I think that it's more about, for them, jobs. And I still think, I know she didn't look at him like he was crazy when he said three cuts. I'm still at three cuts, too, but I'm crazy. So I think it's the tie.
It's May. It's May. I think you said we've got a cut coming.
Right. So I think they're worried more about the jobs front. That's where they're taking the cue from. And jobs are lagging. So if they wait and it actually happens with jobs, they're going to be way behind. They're going to cause a lot more havoc. And then it's going to be a hard landing.
I don't know where the GDP fits into there. Are we looking at stagflation now? That's concerning with that GDP miss that was pretty big.
Yeah.
I don't think, sorry, I don't think that GDP was that bad. I actually think that the consumption and the consumer element to that, I don't think we're close to stagflation.
All right, coming up, Warner Brothers Discovery throwing an air ball in the NBA rights fight. The details on who could sweep the sports streaming series next, plus insurance company Lemonade higher after the bell. CEO Daniel Schreiber will join us with some exclusive insights into his company's latest quarter right after this. Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Warner Brothers Discovery dropping over 9% today amid concerns that the company's NBA broadcasting rights are in jeopardy. The Wall Street Journal reporting NBC Universal, the parent company of CNBC, is set to pay $2.5 billion a year to air the package of NBA games currently on Warner's TNT network. NBC parent company Comcast, meantime, finishing the day down almost 2%. That could be a real blow for Warner Brothers.
Well, it could be. The NBA has been gold. And in the stock draft, of course, Kenny the Jet Smith chose
That's
that,
right.
And he edged out
in.
Karen. Yes. He swooped in. He kind of stole her pick.
Well, at the moment, I'm relieved.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I mean, it's down 11% from there. I just happened to look because I was like, oh.
And those guys do a great job on TNT and TBS. And so, I mean, to the extent that that has been a major draw for them, this is big news. Although they could bid for it as well, seemingly. We'll see.
So if they bid for it as well, I mean, at some point, is it too much money,
yes.
Right? I don't know what that point is, but, I mean, is this sort of make or break? Maybe. They might have to bid regardless.
Yeah, this is gold, basically, for them. So you need to win this battle. So whoever's bidding, you better come with your best, your highest and best, or else you are going to be left behind. This is whether you're talking about streaming, whether you're talking about Netflix, whether you're talking about everyone. These are coveted items,
but it's gold
that you need to buy.
Only at a certain price.
Yeah,
if it's gold and it's too expensive, then it's still not worth it.
Well, and they're a victim of their own success. And I'm looking at a note from Wolf Research where they say that basically Turner over-earning on aged NBA deal and basically that the streamer interest is making the rights more expensive in 25, 26. They've priced themselves higher. They've done a great job. And again, those guys on the pregame do a great job, too. The product is what it is. But that's part of the conundrum they're in.
Yeah. Coming up, more After Hours action to bring you. Shares of Lemonade on the move after reporting. The CEO will join us next to pour over the insurance company's results, lay out how he is hoping to disrupt the insurance industry. Plus, huge moves in cannabis stocks, the headlines that sent the space puffing higher. How our traders are handling the names. Don't go anywhere. Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money and Earnings Alert on Lemonade. Shares jumping after the low-cost insurer reported a smaller loss than expected. The fintech giving shareholders encouragement about cash flow and the role AI is playing in its business. Lemonade CEO Daniel Schreiber joins us before the conference call, which is scheduled for tomorrow morning. Daniel, great to have you with us.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
The stock is up 8.5%. I'm just wondering, you know, in terms of offering low-cost insurance, you're not making money right now, so are you just sort of eating the cost in order to gain market share versus competitors?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Every policy that we sell by law has to be profitable. So the marginal profit is significant. In the results that we just published a few minutes ago, we said that not only is our book growing, which speaks to what you just asked me, but also our gross profit has grown dramatically. In fact, we've more than doubled our gross profit year on year, and our losses are therefore shrinking. They shrank by a third in the results that we just published. So you're seeing us sell more and more products, all of them marginally profitable. The more we sell, the more profitable we get, and we expect to break into cash flow positivity before the year is out.
Can you talk to me about the guidance that you issued for Q2? Because it does look, on the surface at the very least, that it is below what the street was expecting in terms of revenues as well as your EBITDA loss.
Yeah, so we've actually raised guidance for the year across all key metrics. So everything is entirely on plan. But during Q2, we do intend to continue to invest in growth, perhaps more than the market expected. So we've been not merely growing fast, but accelerating growth. We went from 18 to 19 to 20, this quarter 22%. We're going to continue that trend line all the way up into the higher 20s throughout the year and hopefully higher than that beyond. So this is all part of the plan. We need to grow into profitability. Insurance is not a business that is profitable at subscale levels. So growth is a key condition to that profitability that we expect to get to, as I say, before the year is out on a cash flow basis.
Mr. Schreiber, it's Karen Feinerman. Thanks for being on today. So we hear a lot about other insurance companies really sort of stepping back from offering some products and just being unable with some of the extreme weather situations to know what they're underwriting. And so are you able to cherry pick, or how is it that you feel comfortable expanding your business?
Hey, Karen. So the founding thesis of Lemonade was very much in line with your question or the premise behind it, which is that you build an insurance company from scratch on a digital substrate using AI as a foundational tool. And we've been doing that since 2015 when we founded the company. Things are going to look different. And insurance is a business that is all about pricing and selling probability theory. It's statistical. So machine learning and the tools of modern technology are really transformative for the foundations of insurance. So yes, where other insurers see crude groupings of policyholders and are unable to see the nuances between them, we have orders of magnitude more insight, almost X-ray vision relative to incumbency, and therefore ability to price differentially and choose who we underwrite with far greater precision, perhaps, than the industry is used to by historical standards.
How much better does your profitability get as AI improves? And what sort of trajectory do you look at in terms of the improvement of AI that you need to see in order for it to actually impact your profitability or revenue?
And how much does it cost you to get there? Because I think
what
the street's worried about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've already seen or been able to demonstrate quite a lot of it. Just this quarter, we announced, as I say, 22% growth, but an 11% decrease in headcount. Our OPEX is unmoved in 2 years, even as we've doubled our book. So you are seeing in the number the dramatic impact of the automation that AI has done for us. 98% of our policies are sold by AI. 50% of our claims are handled start to finish without any human intervention whatsoever. Consumers, of course, delighted. They get a claim paid in 3 seconds. They're not missing the human, but the costs just absolutely collapse. And we're seeing that in our numbers, as I say, doubling the business in 2 years, trebling the gross profit, whereas OPEX not moving an inch over those same 2 years.
Daniel, we got to let you go. Fascinating to hear about your business. Appreciate your time.
And I appreciate yours. Thank you so much.
Daniel Schreiber of Lemonade, which is up about 60% over the past 12 months. Interesting business model.
Very interesting. And as a much smaller player than the rest of the group. He had me at AI. He mentioned it a bunch of times. And there are people who screen for how much more efficient you can run an insurance business. This 50% of them are handled without human beings. I'm not a fan of human beings. I like the stock.
I literally got on before the show and just to see how it worked, got a quote for home insurance in less than 5 minutes.
Well, you own like 15 homes now. So, man, it's going to cost you some money.
Exaggeration.
She's a mogul. The loss ratios require reinvestment in a lot of the technology that makes them so different. There's a view out there. It's going to be tough to get to scale, but it's fascinating what they're doing. There's no question. It'd remove the humans all day long.
Coming up, cannabis stocks burning higher. The big changes coming from marijuana and how these names can keep rolling. The dope details.
Oh, man.
Next, more Fast Money in 2. Welcome back to Fast. We got some details out of the Amazon conference call. The stock giving back some of its gains. Kate Rooney's got the details. Hey, Kate.
Hey, Melissa. So they're drilling down on the expense side of what AWS growth is going to look like. They're talking about CapEx on the call. CEO Andy Jassy saying we expect the combination of AWS and reaccelerating growth and high demand for Gen AI to meaningfully increase year over year capital expenditures in 2024. He says, given the way the AWS business model works, he says that's a positive sign for future growth, and that the more demand AWS has, the more they have in terms of demand for new data centers and hardware, and talks about some of the spending there. The CFO, Brian Olsavsky, also talking about that, saying that operating margins continue to fluctuate, but saying they remain focused on driving efficiencies across the business, which does enable them to invest in places like AWS and AI. But you can see shares kind of bouncing around here after hours, but we are getting a little bit more granularity on the CapEx conversation, Melissa. Back over to you.
We'll see if they actually say what meaningful means. Kate, thank you. Kate Rooney. Meantime, cannabis stocks surging today on news that the Biden administration is moving to reclassify marijuana from the most strict Schedule 1 drug to the least dangerous Schedule 3. The move would put marijuana in the same category as Tylenol and codeine. It's been classified with drugs like heroin and methamphetamine since the Controlled Substance Act was enacted more than 50 years ago. The AP reporting that Attorney General Merrick Garland is expected to enforce endorse the DEA approval. So it has to be approved, oddly, by the OMB, but it does. So
well, and there still is a process here. So for people that are overly cynical, and you should be, about the political process, especially around cannabis, this could bleed into an election period, and that wouldn't be great. I don't think it will. And let's be clear, in the middle of 40% of the S&P reporting, this is a historic day in cannabis. This is news that we expected to happen, but now that you've actually gotten the follow-through, the implications for this are massive. So this isn't federalization, but this is clearly, people know a little bit about, even if they're not in the industry, that there's a punitive taxation on the companies in the space, which makes them almost by definition unprofitable. This will change cash flow overnight. But the follow-through from the institutional support, what this means in terms of additional reform, what this means in terms of institutional sponsorship, is massive. And the market rallied 30% today on top of the other 100 it rallied since this was announced. It's amazing.
Up next, final trades. Final trade, Tim.
Thanks for everything, Steph. Lyft.
Karen.
Short TLT.
Steve.
Generac, earnings tomorrow.
All right. The music won't be the same without her, that's for sure.
No question.
He's watching Fast Money. Mad Money starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.